In the days when the world was young, there lived in France a little man of no importance. Everybody said he didn't amount to anything, and he firmly believed this himself. For he was just a traveling circus performer, a juggler. He couldn't read or write. All he knew how to do was to go around from town to town following the little country fairs, doing his tricks for the children and earning a few pennies a day. His first name was Barnaby, but he was too unimportant to have any last name at all. Now, when it was summertime and the weather was sunny and beautiful, and the people were strolling along the streets, and the young lovers holding tightly to each other's hands in the park, then Barnaby would be happy, for he could find a clear place in the village square, and he would spread out a strip of old carpet on the cobblestones, and on the carpet, he would perform his tricks for the children and grown-ups alike. And Barnaby, although he knew he was a man of no importance, was a wonderful juggler. You wouldn't believe half the things he could do. At first, he would only balance a tin pie plate on the tip of his nose. But when a crowd had collected, he would stand on his head and juggle 6 golden-colored balls in the air at the same time, catching them with his feet. And sometimes he could actually stand on his head and juggle 12 sharp knives instead of the golden balls and catch them with his feet, too. And then the people would applaud, and the children jump up and down with delight, and a whole rain of pennies would be thrown onto Barnaby's carpet. And at the end of a day's work like this, Barnaby would gather up the pennies in his hat, and before wearily resting his aching muscles, he would kneel down on the carpet and reverently thank God for the hat full of pennies. And always, the people would laugh at his simplicity, and everybody would agree that Barnaby would never amount to anything. But all this is about the happy days in his life, the summer days, when the weather was warm and people were willing to toss a few coins to a poor juggler. But when winter came, then Barnaby could afford no place to sleep. He would wrap up the juggling equipment in the old carpet and trudge along the country roads, begging a chance to sleep a night in some farmer's barn or doing his tricks for some rich person's servants in order to be given a meal. And Barnaby, of course, being so simple, never thought of complaining. He knew that the winter and the rains were as necessary as the summer and the sun. And as he trudged along, he would say to himself, "How can such an ignorant fellow as I ever hope for anything better?" Now, one year in France, there was a terrible winter. And on an evening in early November, at the end of a dreary, wet day, as Barnaby trudged along a muddy road, sad and bent, with the raindrops running down his face and off the tip of his nose, carrying under his arm the golden balls and sharp knives wrapped up in the old carpet, he saw something moving ahead of him. And as he drew closer, he saw that it was a fine, fat, white mule. And on the mule was a fine, fat monk, dressed in warm clothes and singing to himself as he rode along. And when the monk saw poor, muddy Barnaby, he smiled at him and called out, "It's going to be a cold evening. How would you like to spend the night where I live, at the monastery?" "Oh," cried Barnaby, running in the mud alongside of the mule, "if only I could. But will they let an ignorant fellow like me enter such a holy place as a monastery?" And the monk laughed, "Of course, friend, for aren't we all ignorant as jackasses when we compare ourselves to the Lord?" And the monk pulled Barnaby up behind him on the mule, and Barnaby had to hold both arms around the monk's fat middle in order to stay on, and they both began laughing as they rode on down the road. And that night, Barnaby found himself seated at the table in the huge dining hall of the great monastery. It was blazing with candles in silver candlesticks, and the table was covered with enormous roasts of fine, rare beef, legs of mutton, swimming in gravy, and whole roast pigs with red apples in their mouths, and chicken pies and big cakes covered with crushed almonds, and all the fresh apple cider that a man could drink. Although Barnaby, of course, was seated at the very foot of the table, together with the servants and the beggars, he gazed about him with a candlelight shining in his eyes, and he thought he had never seen such a wonderful sight this side of heaven. And suddenly, trembling with excitement, he jumped up from his stool. He ran around the table to where the Lord Abbot, who was head of the monastery, sat at the top and sank to his knees. "Father, please grant my prayer. Please let me stay here. I can't ever expect to become a holy man. I'm too ignorant. But let me work in the stables and mop up the kitchen floor and just let me stay. And the plump, jolly monk who had met Barnaby on the road turned to the head of the monastery. This is the good man, simple and pure in heart. And so the abbot nodded his head, and that night Barnaby was given a cell of his own to sleep in. He put the juggling equipment under his cot, and before going to sleep, he solemnly promised himself that he would never again go back to his old profession of juggling 6 golden balls and 12 sharp knives. Now in the days that followed, everyone smiled to watch Barnaby work. He would scrub the cobblestones of the kitchen floor and polish the huge copper kettles and pans. And with his strong acrobat's muscles knotting under the strain, he would willingly carry huge bundles of fodder to the cattle. And when the chapel bells rang out for services, he would creep humbly in by the back door and kneel down in a dark corner at the rear. And all through those early days, his face shone with happiness from morning until night. Until 2 weeks before Christmas. Then a bewildered expression began to appear on his homely face, and slowly his joy turned to misery and despair. For all about him, Barnaby saw each monk busily preparing a wonderful gift to place in the chapel on Christmas Day. There was Brother Marlborough, who was a sculptor, and was finishing a beautiful new statue of Christ. This artist spent all of his hours chiseling in stone so that his beard and his eyebrows and his hair were always white with stone dust. And Brother Maurice, who was a painter and who would take gold and silver and rare enamels and paint exquisite little pictures on the corner of each page of a Bible. And Brother Ambrose, who was writing a new hymn to be sung at the Christmas service. And Brother Joseph, who was composing the music for it. Everywhere Barnaby looked were these educated, trained men following their work, each one making a wonderful gift to place in the chapel on Christmas Day. And what about Barnaby? He could do nothing. He would go to his cell and unwrap the juggling equipment and look at it sadly. "I am but a rough man, unskilled in art. I can't read or write. All I know how to do is perform a few tricks. Alas, everybody has a gift to give except me." Christmas morning came at last, and strangely enough, it was the first day in that bitter winter that the sun broke out and shone brilliantly. The monastery was all decorated with pine branches and red holly berries. Hundreds of candles gleamed everywhere, and all of the buildings rang with music and songs. It took 25 of the monks to roll Brother Marlborough's big new statue into the chapel. Then the choir sang the hymn that had been written by Brother Ambrose. Then the beautiful Bible with the paintings of Brother Maurice was placed before the altar. And one by one, each brother went forward to present his gift to God. But Barnaby had disappeared. Now a strange and terrible thing happened that no brother in the great monastery would ever forget during all the years of his life. For that evening, after the visitors had gone home and most of the monks were resting on their hard beds, the fat, jolly monk who had brought Barnaby to the monastery went running down the halls, his face white as a ghost's. He padded over the stone floors to the private room of the abbot, pushed open the door without knocking, and panting with excitement, he seized the abbot by the arm. "Father, a frightful thing has happened. The most terrible sacrilege ever to take place in a church. Come with me." Without speaking a word, the abbot joined him, and the two men ran down the hall, pushed through a door, and came out on the choir balcony at the rear of the chapel. The monk pointed a trembling finger down toward the altar. The abbot looked, turned ashen in color. "God forgive him! He has gone mad!" Down in front, squarely in front of the altar, was Barnaby. He had spread out his strip of old carpet on the floor, and kneeling reverently on one knee, was juggling in the air 6 golden colored balls. He was presenting his old act, the golden balls, the sharp knives, and on the very tip of his nose was balanced a tin pie plate, and on his face was a look of adoration and joy. "We must seize him and drag him away," cried the abbot, and the two men turned toward the door. But at that exact moment, a dazzling light suddenly filled the chapel, a brilliant beam coming directly from the altar, and the two men sank to their knees. for as Barnaby had finished his juggling act and knelt, exhausted on the floor, they saw the statue of the Virgin Mary move. She came down from her pedestal, and going to where Barnaby knelt, she reached down and took the blue hem of her robe and touched it to his forehead, gently drying the beads of sweat that glistened there, and the light dimmed. And up in the choir balcony, the monk turned to the abbot. God has accepted the only gift he had to give. And the abbot slowly nodded. Blessed are the simple in heart, for they also shall see God.